Good morning, you're listening to FloridaDaily.net, and I'm Kemp Haar. This morning, my guest is John Ball, who is Managing Director with Stifel Nicolaus. John, how you doing?
Great, Kemp. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. I wanted to talk to you now that most of the publicly traded flooring companies have reported in. I thought we'd maybe run through the ones that you follow. Maybe we could start with Mohawk.
Yeah, actually, it was a pretty strong quarter in the fourth quarter out of Mohawk on the carpet side. They really surprised on a margin basis in particular. The upper mid-single digits, I believe, was around 7% EBIT margin, which is a real surprise relative to our modeling. We were nervous given the fact that residential carpet shipments were clearly negative in the fourth quarter, second half of the year for 2010, for that matter. Yet they were able to reduce costs and got through some measure of price increases. And I think it's also important to note that they really hadn't been hit yet by the rising raw material issue in the fourth quarter due to the fact they're on FIFO accounting within the Mohawk division. That basically means there's kind of a 90-day lag when they'll feel those cost impacts. So we'll see the rising, escalating raw material costs flow through in the first and second quarters of 2011. But all in all, I think it was a pretty decent fourth quarter given the macro backdrop of housing.
Yeah, actually, if you look at CRI numbers, it looks like in the fourth quarter, the carpet volume was down about 3.5%, and the Mohawk numbers, as far as volume was concerned, is about the same number, right?
Okay. Yeah, and I believe the residential units were down more than that, and the commercial, to some degree, offset that. So, yeah, it was a tough volume quarter for the industry and Mohawk domestically. Also, the Uniland business had a pretty tough quarter, so it was the margins of the Mohawk division that really carried the numbers in the fourth quarter, which has not been the case now for two or three years running, where there's been extreme pressure on the Mohawk division, and typically the Uniland division has been the one that's sort of bailed the company out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I got confused when I saw this constant day basis analysis. I guess when you factored in to compare apples to apples, it was a little better than just the initial reporting. Is that right?
Correct, yes. That's just the timing difference of the way the quarters end. And there's a phenomenon every few years. You get a 14-week quarter versus a 13-week quarter, and you benefit when you get that, and then you got to give it back when you compare a 13-week quarter versus a 14-week quarter, and it's all accounting, and it's rather meaningless.
Right. So basically, earnings for the company for the fourth quarter was $46 million, which compared to that same quarter the year before, which was only $20 million. So they did better than twice as good as from an earnings standpoint, right?
Yeah, and as I said, that Mohawk division was pushing a 7% EBIT margin, and boy, off the top of my head, it's been several years. Certainly you'd have to go back prior to the downturn before you saw those kinds of numbers in sort of the 2007 time frame.
Mm-hmm. And they just closed a plant. I guess it was one of their original Mohawk commercial plants. If you look at that, and if they're consolidating operations on the commercial side, the profitability may get even better, right?
Well, yeah, you've got to... We're seeing carpet tile grow and broadloom shrink on the commercial side. So there's kind of a give and take there in terms of an add and an offset. But I think the key is going to be from here volumes. They've obviously done a good job of cost containment, and we do have to get beyond the sort of delta between pricing and raw materials, which is going to probably be a negative issue for the next couple quarters, but company's positions itself in the carpet side to benefit from higher volumes, and we're all just sitting here waiting for that day to come.
We should talk about that in a minute. So for the year 2010, the Mohawks have basically $5.3 billion in sales, and that's slightly down from their 2009 number. Is that right?
Yeah, more or less flat.
All right. Let's talk about Armstrong.
Kind of a disappointing year, certainly on the wood flooring side of things, where Armstrong battled rampant inflation in lumber, had really more to do with the logging situation. And, demand wasn't exactly strong on the wood flooring side. I believe revenues in wood flooring for the year were down in the 6% range. So it wasn't driven by increased demand, but very difficult to get pricing to offset with demand so soft. So It was a disappointing year on the wood side. On the vinyl side, if you were to extract Europe, which is buried in Armstrong's vinyl segment results, it was a marginally better year. I think there were numerous things there, including getting a little more efficient on production in the U.S., a little bit of a mix improvement, good laminate results, which are included in the resilient side of their business. So that was encouraging, but there was a sizable loss still in the European operations. I believe it was almost $20 million of an EBIT loss. They are restructuring that business. They have announced they're exiting the residential vinyl business in Europe. So they do hope to come closer to break even in 2011 on the European vinyl operations. But, really, when you look at the whole year, Kemp, for Armstrong, kind of the same song where they really didn't make a lot of money in flooring. All the money they made was on the ceilings side of their business, where even margins there for the year were almost 18%. And, they made a nominal amount of money in the flooring operation.
I know they just changed some management on the residential side of that business. And I see where you have them as a buy, so you're optimistic.
The stock's been good for us. The way I've viewed the stock up to this point is you really have been buying, as an investor, you're buying a cash flow stream and an earnings stream that's largely coming from the ceilings side of the business, which I think will continue to grow. And you're getting all of the flooring operations, which are roughly half of the revenue, almost for free, in my mind, in the sense that you're buying at the bottom of the cycle, we hope, on the residential flooring side, and you're getting, the resilient revenues were $1 billion last year. Wood was just under $500 million. So you're getting $1.5 billion of revenue, or a majority of the company's revenue, with very little earnings currently associated with those revenues. And there's a whole bunch of restructuring efforts underway to reduce costs. And, if we see any volume lift and we get the delta between raw material and price to settle down, plasticizers and resins have gone up significantly, impacting the vinyl business. Now, I think there's high single-digit EBIT margins in these businesses. They're both good businesses, but you just haven't been able to see that in the last 3 or 4 years with the volume declines combined with generally escalating raw material costs and difficulty of passing those increases along. So I still like the stock. We still think there's a significant upside through the cycle, if you will, to see those residential flooring earnings come back.
And the long-range outlook for the wood preference as far as the consumer's perspective is still very good, is what we hear.
Yeah, I think so. And, that business obviously was crushed going into the downturn with 50 to 50% plus being new construction, and
right.
New construction went down 70%. That's a tough nut to crack. We've bottomed on new construction. I don't think we'll see a big lift in new residential construction, single family. We'll see a little more lift short term in multifamily, which is probably less wood intensive, but we have bottomed, and it's only a question of how much we go up and when, as opposed to will we continue to go down. And I think that latter scenario is very unlikely. So, preference is still there. So now we just need to get some level of construction, and remodel activity off of these, 40-50% down numbers from the peak.
All right, let's talk about Interface. Actually, that's probably the best performance of the three.
Well, we mentioned earlier that the carpet tile segment of commercial flooring is where the strength is, and here's the domestic and worldwide leader in carpet tile, so not surprised to see their results good. They've also benefited over the years from the segmentation strategy, although what's interesting about 2010 is that we saw the office market rebound, and frankly, that was a little bit of a surprise. As I go back to the beginning of the year, I don't think anyone really would have forecasted, certainly I didn't, the level of strength that we'd see throughout the year, particularly the second half, in the commercial repair remodel side of the business. Obviously, new construction and commercial was very poor, and it'll remain poor for 2011 and a good part of 2012. But We saw corporations beginning to commit to new leases, and I think there were a lot of refurbishment allowances thrown in. In other words, if you sign a 10-year lease, we'll let you move walls and recarpet and repaint and relight the place. And that lifted the commercial and R&R activity in the office side of the business late in 2010.
Yeah, companies were more profitable. They spent some money, as you said, in the refurbishment of commercial space. So as you look at this, there's a couple factors that have a major bearing. One is obviously on the residential side is consumer confidence. We had some great numbers last month, but now we're watching gasoline prices spike and unrest in the Middle East. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on the residential side as we move into the year. What's your call on that?
Well, my view of the consumer is, as it relates to residential flooring purchases, we've suffered for 4.5-5 years this downturn. So, for example, we've gotten construction down to a level where it seemingly won't go lower.
Right.
We've also, I think, Kemp, through this downturn, delayed and delayed and delayed and put off, say, more pressing remodel repair activity. So that rising consumer confidence that you began to see in the fourth quarter, a rising stock market, and therefore somewhat of a level of recovery of retirement assets, I think has triggered some level of spending on that remodel piece that's been delayed. And so from the low level that we're operating at as an industry, and if we were just to look at residential repair remodel for a second, you know, I think the trend is up. However, to get, you know, what I would call nice growth being, you know, at least a 10% lift off of here, we're going to need to see existing home sales, and I mean single-family home sales here, preferably of the more expensive homes, starting to turn over. We really haven't seen that yet. So, you know, we'll take what we get, right? We get a little lift and repair remodel just because we have to, and it's been so long we put it off. That's helpful, and that's what I think we're seeing now. But we really need to see mortgage applications rise. We need to see homes turning over to get a genuine lift in demand, and we just haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, right. I know you don't follow Dixie right now, but they just reported, and they are on the upper end of the residential business, and they had some good numbers. So,
yeah, clearly been an improvement on the luxury side of so many consumer categories, and I think that's a direct function of the lift in stock market values off the March 2009 lows. We've recovered an awful lot, not all, but an awful lot of the evaporation of net worth and equities, and you know that's going to influence the affluent consumer. The $50,000 wage earner, it's barely a blip on the radar, but clearly luxury goods had a good fourth quarter, and some of that was reflected in floor covering spend. So that Fabrica and Maslin lines are in the sweet spot of that luxury spend.
You know, we're talking today on the morning after the market dropped below 12,000. Hopefully that was just a little hiccup. And
Well, I'm not going to get into market prognosticating.
No,
that's well beyond my purview, but certainly we're, in my opinion, Kemp, still in a fragile state as it relates to the consumer psyche. So we cannot have oil go to $150 or $200 a barrel, and we cannot have a significant erosion of the stock market or a lot of the gains and improvements we've seen will evaporate quickly. So, and I think the Fed knows that, and that's why we're seeing a zero interest rate policy.
Right.
And these quantitative easing measures, there's still a flood of liquidity that the Fed's trying to inject into the system because they know that we're still in a somewhat fragile state of recovery. But I'm not going to get into the stock market.
Yeah. Right. I think the consumer watches that, and confidence is a big factor. So,
Yeah, confidence is key. But, you know, at the end of the day, the confidence is built on real events.
Right.
And so things like oil and what we pay for groceries are real events. And and certainly we're seeing material inflation there. If wages don't follow, ultimately disposable personal income is squeezed.
Right.
And the confidence would then wane. So we're at a very fragile state of recovery. Jobs are coming back slowly. There's reason to be optimistic. But we can't have external shocks, or we could go back down again, and that's, again, why I believe the Fed is so accommodative still.
Yeah, right. Okay, John, appreciate you taking us through these three public companies. Good to talk to you as always. Been talking to John Ball with Stifel Nicolaus, and you've been listening to Kemphar and FloorDaily.net.